John looked at me that night and we had this conversation. And he said to me, he said, "You are nothing but a thief." And I'm like, he says, "Maybe not the kind of thief that'd kick in a joint or steal from your mom's purse." He knew my story. He said, "You are a worse kind of thief than that." He says, "Because you and me and all alcoholics become thieves of the worst kind. Because we steal from those we love the most their right to happiness." See, what happened when he said that is he entered my cave of darkness. And he grabbed me by the hand, and he was able to do that because he was a man with a message of depth and weight. And he began to lead me out of the darkness to the sunlight of the Spirit, one step at a time. Thank God. I remember the next morning, he woke me up, comes into the bedroom. He comes into the bedroom and wakes me up. He's clapping his hands. He's like 80, okay? I'm 25. Okay. And he comes in, "Come on, kid, we got things to do, places to go, people to see." And I'm like, "Wait a minute, dude, you're 80. I don't know a damn person in Texas, and I won't sleep." "No, no, kid, come on." And he began to discipline me. He began to introduce me to Alcoholics Anonymous in a way that I had never been introduced before. That morning, he brought me to his best friend's house, and his best friend was a man named Bill O'Neill, and Bill's wife was Arbutus O'Neill. And those of you that are longtime Al-Anon will recognize that name, Arbutus. And we pulled into their driveway, and Big John looked at me and he said, "Kid, this is the Midwest Tape Library. It's the largest AA tape library in the world." And I'm like, "So what?" And we get in, okay, and I meet Bill. Now I was, I'm new, and I was guilty of judging people a little bit. I would never do that today, don't. I judged him. I thought, he met us at the door, okay. He had one eye and one arm, okay. He lost his eye in an auto accident. He lost his arm in an auto accident in two different accidents. I don't know if he lost the eye first, and that's how it went. Anyway. So he was kind of rough looking, and we go in, and we're sitting at the table, and we did this every day. But here they had a coffee maker. It was just an orange little pot of hot water, and then you dumped it over dirt, and then you drank it and pretended that it was good. And you were grateful for that coffee. And I was. One morning, shortly after I got there, they were, Bill got sober October 21st of 1951. So he had 1 week more than John, and he never let him forget it. And to watch these guys, it was great. But they knew Bill W. and Lois and Dr. Bob's son and his wife because they were living in Texas. And so I got to know all these people through them. And they knew Sister Ignatia. And Big John met AA number 3, Bill Dodson, back in 1952 before Bill died. So I was exposed to these pioneers through these guys that were like the second generation of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were giving me this history and sharing things about Sister Ignatia or Sam Shoemaker or the Oxford Group or whatever. And this particular day, I should tell you that when I arrived to Texas, I could not talk like I can today. I could get about a 7-word sentence out and 3 of them would start with F. And well, I thought it was my turn this day, and I shared one of my sentences. And Bill glared at me with one of his eyes, and he started pounding his finger on the table, and he says, "Young man, the first thing we clean up in here is our mouth." And I thought, grumpy. Well, I remember getting out of there, and I said to Big John, I said, "What's up with him, man?" I said, "I'm 25. You guys aren't going to try to start telling me how to talk, are you?" And he says, "Well, kid," he says, "this program saved our life, and it might save."